Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. Commercial radio is an amazing thing, isn't it? Just think, at the push of a button, you can hear the 10 most popular songs in America over and over and over again. Of course, it's not all hits all the time. About 20 minutes of each hour are dedicated to ads. Small wonder, then, that millions of people have been searching for something better. For some, that's an iPod. Still others are shelling out $12.95 a month for satellite radio. XM and Sirius, the rival satellite radio companies, have been touting their unrivaled musical choices with some 300 channels between the two of them. But according to Washington Post reporter Mark Fisher, that original vision of dozens of specialty music formats has given way to a more mainstream approach. Mark Fisher joins us today from the Washington Post newsroom. Mark, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks very much, John.
Also joining us today on the phone is Rick Menares. He's a senior analyst with The Motley Fool, a financial advisory services company based in Alexandria, Virginia. Rick covers the business of satellite radio. Rick, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you, John, and good afternoon, Mark.
I should mention, just in the interest of full disclosure, that Soundcheck itself is broadcast on satellite radio on XM 133. Rick, let me start with you. It's been tough times for both XM and Sirius from a bottom-line perspective. Last year, they each lost over $500,000, and their shares have dropped in value. As a listener or potential listener, what does that mean to me?
Yeah, I mean, unless you're actually getting a gift set that you're getting your XM or Sirius satellite receiver with like 100 shares of stock, for the most part, you probably couldn't care less, as long as the companies stay financially solvent. And thankfully, I mean, even though they have been losing a lot of money, they are both angling towards becoming, you know, positive cash flow positive sometime, you know, in the next few quarters. So, I mean, they should remain as, you know, as entities sustainable in that sense. So it shouldn't really concern you if you're a satellite radio fan. So obviously, if you're an investor, you've seen your shares lose about a half or two-thirds of its value over the last year and a half. It obviously hurts.
Right, but in an economy where individuals and even governments are just, you know, carrying deficits as a matter of course, that sort of thing is perhaps not as a dicey a situation as it once would have been.
Yeah, I would be more concerned if the subscribers started tailing off right now than the income statement's coming in a little red.
Right. Now, Rick, you've listened to both Sirius and XM, and Mark, you have too. But, Rick, which do you like? What do you like about the satellite radio medium as a whole?
Well, I mean, I love the medium, and actually, I'm that rare person that actually subscribes to both Sirius and XM. I subscribed to Sirius 2 years ago, and I got on the little lifetime plan, so I was pretty much anchored to my little Sportster radio. And then I bought a car in May that came with XM, and I said, I don't need XM. I'm just going to take my Sirius and port it over there. But every car on the lot came with XM, so I said, well, you know, you have 3 months. It's coming. You know, you're paying for it anyway. These three months, go for it, and then just cancel. And no, I mean, 3 months later, I said, you know what, I can actually, you know, the differences are discernible to me, which is something that I didn't think would happen, and I didn't want to live without either one, so I went ahead and subscribed to XM as well.
Mark, did you have, with your 4 months of intensive listening to both XM and Sirius, did you have a kind of similar response at the end of that period?
You know, I really did, and I didn't expect to. I'd been a subscriber to XM more or less since the start and was very happy with it in some ways, although disappointed in others that we can get into. But when I then sat down and got into Sirius, you know, I like them as well. And there are some stylistic differences. There are some differences in the kinds of music that they play, big differences in news and talk. And, you know, generally, if you had to summarize the approach, we'd find that with Sirius, there's a lot. It feels more like radio. The DJs play a larger role. They talk more, and they give you a little more guidance about what the music is as they introduce you to some new music. With XM, it's a little bit more of a jukebox sound in that you're getting wall-to-wall music, but maybe a larger variety of music than you get on Sirius. Both of the services have moved away from that very specialized kind of niche offerings that they promised early on and have become more mainstream, but there's still a lot more happening on satellite than you find in your average commercial band.
Right, but I do want to follow up on that, because in your article in the Washington Post, you talk about how a lot of those niche channels have been killed off, you know, the world music, some of the less popular forms of pop music, you know, things that would have attracted many smaller, discrete but smaller audiences to satellite radio have now given way to multiple takes on rock and pop music.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, I recall back when XM was just an idea in someone's mind, and some of the initial investors came to see me to ask me to write about this at the very front end, and they were billing this as something that was going to provide something for every little affinity group in the country. And so, you know, they said, we're going to have a separate channel for chamber music and another one for contemporary classical and another for every possible flavor of jazz. And when they started out, there were some of those things. There was a cool cocktail lounge channel. There was an African pop channel, all sorts of exotica. And what they've realized since then is that a lot of people just want to hear the kinds of popular music that no longer air on commercial radio. So there are lots of different flavors of mainstream rock and pop, and some more specialized music, but really not a whole lot. And that's disappointing to those of us who have more eclectic tastes.
Hi, we're speaking with Mark Fisher of the Washington Post and Rick Munares from The Motley Fool about satellite radio. Now, not too long ago on XM, you could hear the World Zone channel, which was a world music service. And if you were interested in the West African couple of Amadou and Mariam, for example, that was a place where you could hear this. Now, unfortunately, the World Zone channel is no longer on XM, but you can, on Sirius Satellite Radio, hear something vastly different, a whole channel devoted to Jimmy Buffett and Buffett-like material. All right, Rick Munares, coming back to you for your reaction on this. Well, I mean, there's more to it than just, you know, world music out, Jimmy Buffett in. I know there's some, you know, Canadian language requirements that necessitated the XM excision of the World Zone channel. But what do you make of the larger, of what Mark has written about in the Post?
I did read Mark's article, and it was a great story. But I think what you have to consider in all this is that, I mean, over the past year, XM has gone. They had 68 stations. Now they're 69, I mean, commercial free music stations and another 5 commercial clear channel stations. And Sirius, they've gone from 65 to 67 channels. So you're still getting more music. I mean, do I have a beef? I mean, would I have preferred if they would have stuck, you know, kept the world music instead of adding, you know, a 14th rock station? Of course. But you have a case where you have to compare that to what you're getting on regular terrestrial radio. I'm calling you. I live here in Miami, Florida, where 4 years ago, WTMI-FM, basically the only classical music station here in the area, they played Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, went to the Star Spangled Banner, and then started playing techno dance and died. You know, I mean, the format was gone here. I mean, you can say, XM, you only have 3 classical stations. Why can't you have more? If you have 7 country stations, give us more. But that's still more than people are getting through conventional means.
Right. Go ahead, Mark.
That's That's exactly true. And in fact, you're going to find in the coming years that there's much more in the way of talk on FM radio as music formats start to die out on FM. There's kind of an emerging consensus in commercial radio that what people will be coming to broadcast radio for is local news and information, traffic, local services that you can't get on satellite, as well as local talk on politics and on lifestyles. So I think satellite is more and more going to become the music delivery system of radio.
Mm-hmm. And we were already seeing, and it's not just in commercial radio. I mean, you know, it's in public radio as well, where music formats are giving way to news and talk. Rick, let me come back to something you said, which is, you know, that, yes, it's more on satellite than what you get on commercial radio, on terrestrial radio. But is that the comparison? I mean, is that really the yardstick against which satellite radio should be measured? I mean, I thought at the beginning that this was like, you know, they were touting themselves as a whole new thing, that you couldn't even compare it to terrestrial radio. They were going to be so different.
Right. I mean, I think there's the idealistic way to approach things, and there's also the realistic way, where you have a case where the three of us right now, we may say, you know what, the world doesn't need another boy band, yet, you know, a bunch of teenage girls may, you know, beg to disagree. And I'm not saying that we should have boy band stations fill up XM and Sirius, but it's just the reality is that I don't know the exact specifics. Everyone has a genre that they stick to. You know, in my case, in the Motley Fool article that I wrote, it was actually a duel with my copy editor, Adrian Rush, who was upset that XM killed the XM Music Lab, which was a progressive alternative station that they killed. Obviously far removed from African pop or world music, but everybody has something that they can get attached to, and it's easy when you lose it to think that the whole world's out to get you. I enjoy XM and Sirius, and maybe I'm just particularly shallow, but I think, the decisions aren't made on that kind of basis. I think they realize, you know, the amount of people they're going to be tuning in and what's going to be attracted to them at any given time, and they have specialty shows along the way to bring back stuff.
Right. Now, what about the much ballyhooed, high-priced signings of talent like Howard Stern, Oprah Winfrey, Bob Dylan? I mean, yes, they seem to be spiking the subscriber lists, but is that a financial drain that sort of, you know, curtails the amount of different types of music that XM and Sirius can do?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a financial drain, but I mean, it's also something that's overstated right now. I mean, everyone talks about the Howard Stern $100 million a year contract or the Oprah Winfrey $50-some million a year contract, and what they're sort of forgetting is that over the past 6 months, let's take Sirius, for example, their programming and content expenses, they've gone up from $69.5 million to $109.5 million. And sure, a lot of that is the licensing fees and the programming costs involving with all this talent that they're acquiring on the talk side. Yet you also have a case where, yeah, $30 million seems like a lot, but the number of subscribers at Sirius has gone up 158% over the past year, and a lot of that's just basically more music royalties and other things to the performance rights organizations that have come up over that time.
All right, so there's a lot of, I mean, you very quickly get into eye-glazing territory here with, you know, all the different financial ins and outs of satellite radio. But again, to bring it back to the listeners, Mark, in your article in the Washington Post, you talk a lot about, you know, your own experience of listening to both XM and satellite and comparing the two of them. Do you find that both you and Rick started off by saying that there are differences between the two? Can you kind of summarize those for us?
Sure. You know, if you're trying to choose one over the other, you really have to look at what your own interests are, what you want to get out of satellite radio. For me, it was a simple choice. XM is baseball. XM has is the only way you can listen to every baseball game in every city all across the country. And it's just this wonderful way to get in touch with your hometown team and other teams and the great baseball play-by-play announcers from all across the country. So that's kind of a one shot for me. But if your love is football, you're going to make the other choice for Sirius. And there are some major differences in some of the one shot channels. Sirius has an all gay channel, which is a new endeavor that they have over there. On the other hand, there's a lot that's the same. The news channels on the two services are almost identical, and they're almost identically weak in that they are almost all simulcasts of television news. Mm-hmm. And so you have a lot of people talking at you about pictures that you can't see.
All right. Now, the gay channel that you mentioned, the all-gay channel on Sirius, was, again, sort of touted as a lifestyle channel. There'd be lots of, you know, provocative discussions about topics that were of interest to that community. you point out that it is, in fact, mostly like, you know, club music.
Yeah, it hasn't quite worked out yet the way, and this is kind of an overall point that's worth making about satellite radio. Aside from the music channels, they don't really produce a whole lot of programming of their own. So they work out deals where they're taking programming from television or from public radio or from other producers outside of their own companies. And sometimes that feels kind of stale or canned. And, you know, they're big into using celebrities to sell the services. So we now have a Martha Stewart channel on Sirius and an Oprah Winfrey channel on XM. And, you know, these are great ideas. But when you actually listen to them, they can be kind of painfully dull.
On the other hand, there is XM has Bob Dylan, who today is premiering his new album a day before its official release.
Exactly. And actually, the Dylan Show turns out to be a whole lot of fun because he's a DJ who really likes a very wide variety of music and has something to add to tell you about it. So there's a lot of great listening that's never been on the radio before. The comedy channels, for example. I find a lot of people who signed up for the music end up listening to the comedy, and it's terrific stuff.
All right. We're speaking with Washington Post reporter Mark Fisher and with Rick Munarez, senior analyst with The Motley Fool, both of them covering satellite radio. And we'll take a quick break and then we'll open up the phones and take your calls. What would it take to get you to subscribe to a satellite radio service? Do you subscribe already to XM or Sirius? And if so, what do you like or dislike about it? Our phone number is 212-264-7483, or you can email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org. Again, the number 212-264-7483. You're listening to Soundcheck.
Mr. Jones. You raise up your head and you ask, is this where it is? Once upon a time, you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you, people call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall, you thought they were all kidding you.
This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. That's old Bob Dylan, brand new Bob Dylan being premiered, the new album Modern Times on his XM satellite radio show today. We're talking about satellite radio and the state of the art with Mark Fisher of the Washington Post and Rick Munarez, analyst of the Motley Fool, the financial advisory services company, both of them taking a long look at the burgeoning industry of satellite radio, XM and Sirius. And in a moment, well, in a couple of moments, after we wrap up here, we'll have some live jazz guitar, some gypsy-style jazz guitar, courtesy of Stefan Rembel and his ensemble. But we're also opening the phones in our discussion of satellite radio, and email as well. Our email address, soundcheck@wnyc.org. Rick, Mark, let me read the two of you an excerpt from an email we got from Randall in San Francisco. He writes, before I got XM, I always felt like I was missing something, since the radio really was not providing anything of substance, and it is relentlessly inundated with ads. On the rare occasions when you did hear something great, it was difficult to find out who the artist was. XM has not only reawakened my musical appetite, it has broadened my tastes and acquainted me with many new and old artists, some of which I've actually gone to actually meet at small local shows. I even discovered Soundcheck on satellite. This must sound like I work for XM. Nope, I'm just a born-again music lover. Mark, is it the music lovers who are, you know, going to be the future of satellite radio as jazz and classical and even, you know, alternative rock leaves terrestrial radio? Is that where the future lies?
Well, I think it's a mix, but yes, music is the entry point, and music is going to be what keeps people coming back and paying that $13, $14 monthly fee. The fact is that there are probably dozens of genres of music that no longer are available on commercial radio in most cities across the country that are now available on satellite. And as much as we are becoming an iPod nation, the fact is that people want to hear new music and need a way to discover it. And maybe music blogs blogs will emerge as a real competitor to satellite radio. But for most people, the mainstream listener, they don't want to take that extra effort to go out and search through blogs. They'd like to have something that they can punch up in the car that offers them some sounds that they haven't discovered before that aren't among those 30 songs that they hear over and over again on commercial radio.
Right. Rick, is it a good buy at $13 a month? What's the sound quality like?
I mean, I've read reports that people have spotty receptions, and when I first got my Sirius, I had it in one room in the house where I just couldn't get the antenna to get a good connection, so I moved it somewhere else. But as far as my car goes, you know, I've never had a problem with it. Obviously, if you go through tunnels or anything like that, you know, they do have repeaters along the way. But somewhere, you know, you may have spotty reception, but when it comes in clear, which is most of the time, it's excellent.
Okay.
What you do hear from, particularly from classical fans and audiophiles, is that the sound quality on the music channels is really not what people had expected. It is not that digitally pure sound that you get from your iPod or from a good stereo system, and that's because a lot of the channels are quite compressed to fit all those different programs on the satellite service.
So in fact, not as good as the sound of an iPod, which already has some audiophiles' knickers in a twist.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. We're talking about satellite radio with Rick Minares of The Motley Fool, with Mark Fisher of The Washington Post, and now with Charlie on the phone with us in New Jersey. Hey, Charlie.
Hi. How you all doing?
So what do you think about satellite radio?
Well, I have not listened to it, and it hasn't... First of all, let me tell you, I'm a professional broadcaster. I've been in radio since I was like 17 years old, and that was a long time ago. I was back there with Marconi. But... I grew up in the 50s and 60s listening to what has completely disappeared from the dial, what they used to call full-service radio stations, where they play music, they do news, they would inform public affairs, all kinds of things. And when the FCC deregulated a lot of that stuff and said, well, if there's a station in your area that carries news, you don't have to. It's killed local radio. It's killed at least local content radio, coupled with advances in technology. I mean, we used to have two or three stations here at the Jersey Shore where I live where you could tune in on the hour and hear the local news.
Right.
It isn't there anymore, except for, you know, the morning zoo format or the guy and gal chatting about stuff. But there's just no local news on the radio anymore.
So are you saying
satellite sure doesn't offer that to
me. Go ahead, Mark.
That's a terrific point, and it's exactly right. And the analogy is to television, where when cable came along, we saw this proliferation of niches, and the networks didn't quite know what to do. And now, finally, the networks are saying, you know what? We are the last place where people come all from all around the country and gather together for big events. Well, I think you're going to see the same thing starting to happen in commercial radio, where stations are going to look up and say, my goodness, satellite does music so much better than we can ever hope to. What do we have left that will keep people punching up their local broadcast radio station? And I think what we're going to see 5-10 years from now is a few stations in each city saying, we can be the local station like we once were back in those days when you had full-service radio stations. And you may actually start to see some stations investing in local news and the other local content that you can't get on satellite.
So it's going back to literally broadcasting after decades of radio becoming more narrowly defined.
Yeah, we aren't seeing much of it yet, but I think we're starting to see some glimmers that may be the ultimate direction, the savior for commercial radio.
Okay. Our phone number is 212-264-7483, 264-7483, talking about satellite radio. If you've tried satellite radio and haven't liked it, we'd like to hear from you. If you're one of those people who bought a car and it came with a 3-month or a 12-month free subscription to satellite radio, let us know if you plan to start paying for that subscription when it expires. Right now on the phone, we're back in New Jersey with Cliff. Cliff, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, thank you.
So do you have satellite radio?
I do. I have it through the Dish Network, and I have found that instead of watching television, I actually have the radio on. You know, 80% of the time I'm using my Dish Network, I'm using it just to hear music. And the local stations... Yeah, I've lived in Colorado and in Miami, Florida, and now here in New Jersey. And the stations basically cross-country have just gotten so bad that I really appreciate having commercial-free music and actually a better variety.
And is it music that you wouldn't have known before, or are you using it to kind of go back to the familiar things that maybe you haven't heard on the radio in a while?
No, just the opposite. I actually like a lot of new music. I mean, I don't like hearing the same 70s music over and over again. And I actually like hearing a lot of new music. And I've discovered a lot of great bands just from listening to the satellite radio.
All right, Cliff, thanks very much for the call. You're listening to Soundcheck. We're talking about satellite radio. Rick Minar is the last year satellite was basically credited with driving the popularity of Daddy Yankee, the big reggaeton star. Now, I'm not sure how that sort of conclusion can be reached. Have you heard anything, you know, about XM's Latin channel Alegria being a prime mover in that part of the music world?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, when you have 60 different channels, and I mean, it isn't until just now when Nielsen is basically saying, hey, you know, in Arbitron, they're actually going to start monitoring the actual ratings on these radio stations. Until then, it's mostly, you know, pretty much up to what we're guessing people are listening to on satellite radio. But obviously, I mean, there are bands that have been broken through XM and Sirius, and you have a case. I mean, I think Daddy Yankee would have probably been a big hit anyway. I mean, here in Miami, where there's a big Latin market, you know, it's obviously he's pretty well established. But I guess you can say that. I mean, satellite has pretty much taken regional music and made it national for those who want to hear that music.
Mm-hmm. So there is a tastemaker role that they can step into.
Definitely.
That's true, but it's also important to note that some of the major investors and even programmers on satellite radio are some of the same companies that are the backbone of the music and record industry across the country, including Clear Channel, which is, you know, the radio company that everyone loves to hate. Clear Channel is a major investor in satellite radio, particularly in XM.
Okay. Let's take another call. Chris out on Long Island. Welcome to Soundcheck, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Which satellite radio service, if any, do you have?
I have Sirius, and I got it, of course, to follow Howard Stern from terrestrial radio onto the satellite revolution, as he liked to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy the Stern show. I find that Sirius, is for a radiophile like me, doesn't offer a lot in the way of innovating, like original programming, like a sound check. I still find myself turning to NPR for most of my radio that's not music or Stern.
Mm-hmm.
And
point out that here is a person who loves Howard Stern and in the same breath can mention NPR and Soundcheck? Good for you, Chris.
Oh, I don't know. I just love radio that entertains me.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be, you know, in any format. But the problem also with the Sirius that I have anyway is they do have canned NPR programming, like you'll get old episodes of Fresh Air and This American Life. But it sounds like bad AM reception. I mean, it sounds like someone's broadcasting out of a tin can in a basement. And a lot of times I have to fix the treble and the bass on my radio to make it sound more like an FM feed.
Now, this is in your home.
This is in my car.
In the car,
and
okay.
It's varying because when Stern is on, he sounds like he always did back when he was on FM. And they really have that. I don't know if it's because the stuff for the NPR program is mostly canned.
Right.
You know, it could be old recordings.
Right.
But so I find that I'm mixed when it comes to it. I love it because I just love having another option. And, you know, the music is always good as a backup. But as far as original talk programming, I think they have a long way to go.
All right. Thanks very much, Chris. Mark, let me come back to you. The whole thing about sound quality reminds me of, you know, iPods, MP3 players, talking about, you know, the sound quality versus the convenience factor. Isn't it actually true that many of the car manufacturers are now making the new cars more iPod compatible, and won't that pose a threat to satellite radio?
Absolutely, and the war for the car is really just beginning. Motorola has a new service they're rolling out where you'll be able to it's kind of a radio system that's internal to their cell phones. You can use that your cell phone to broadcast within your car. There are lots of new twists and turns coming along, and it's becoming ever easier to use your iPod in the car. So the choice people will have to make is whether they want to program their own music in the car or sign on with one of the satellite companies to have them do it for you. And I think so far the numbers that the satellite providers have been able to amass shows that people do want some serendipity in their lives and not just the cuts that they've downloaded.
Right. We have an email here from someone who writes, I'm particularly interested in XM radio because they have portable players that can not only play the live radio but also record the stations and play MP3s. So there's an example of perhaps someone at XM taking a look down the road, seeing what's coming, and deciding to, you know, do something about it.
Yeah, and I think you definitely see that. I mean, and Sirius also has the S50, which is a good little portable model too. But you're seeing it with the XM NO and the S50, where what used to be these big bulky little models made for, you know, just to put in your car with a little, you know, light you know, car lighter adapter. It's evolved to something you can take on the go with a little portable antenna that goes with you, that's built into the actual headphones and stuff like that.
All right, let's see if we can squeeze in a final call. It's from Adam in the Bronx. Adam, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, you've been listening to all this talk about satellite radio.
I'm 44, and I have a whole bunch of garbage technology going from 8 tracks to laser discs to this, the fight now with which DVD is better, the HD and the Blu-ray. I wish they would have one satellite network. Because you're forced to pick between the two of them. Now, say you like half on one, half on the other. You have to get both of them.
Well, now I'm going to throw your call to Rick, because, Rick, aren't some people calling for exactly that kind of quick fix, namely
a lot of companies merge? They've basically been saying, hey, you know, XM and Sirius should merge. It would help. There's so many synergies. They wouldn't be losing money anymore when they'd be able to consolidate so much of their operations. And even Mel Karmazin has said that he'd be open to buying XM. Mel Karmazin, obviously the CEO of Sirius, says that he is open to buying XM. The problem here is that when DirecTV and the Dish Network, they wanted to get together, you know, the FTC and the FCC basically said, whoa, slow down. You know, this would be like basically a monopoly.
Absolutely.
Which is why I don't see XM and Sirius ever getting together. But what he's saying, it's a valid point, and you get to the differences to the different channels. When I was listening to Sirius, was my first station. I grew up in the 80s. I'm basically, you know, have every John Hughes movie imaginable. I lived that life. I gravitated towards First Wave, which has had the old retro new wave stuff. And Fred Schneider from the B-52s hosted a show. DJs had all these things. When I got XM, nothing compared to that. Everyone told me, well, yeah, tune into to the I Love Lucy channels, which is basically Fred, Ethel, and Lucy, named after, obviously, the Mertzes and the Ricardos.
Right.
And none of the three actually offered what First Wave was offering, yet I found that I liked each one of those for their own particular, you know, offering. So there's a lot of different things out there that could actually appeal to the different stations.
So maybe what we need then are still more satellite radio providers, not less. We've been speaking with Rick Munares, analyst for The Motley Fool, and Mark Fisher, who's written about satellite radio for The Washington Post. Mark, Rick, thank you both for joining us on Soundcheck this afternoon. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Well, you're listening to Soundcheck.
Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday through Thursday with Harry, Mark, and John.
Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Every day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.